I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
How can we mobilize people en masse to act on behalf of the environment? Kofi Deborah has a plan to do that through music and dance.
In addition to being one of the founders of Oko Forests, an organization committed to developing agroforestry systems with small farmers in Ghana, Kofi is a producer of the Asa Bako Festival.
At Asa Bako, changemakers can come together to party with purpose and promote social and economic empowerment for people and environment of Ghana.
In this episode, we are talking with Kofi about the state of environmental activism in Ghana and the power of culture and creativity to make a positive change in the world.
Take a listen.
Hi, I'm Kofi Deborah, and I started Oko Forest and also Asa Bako Music Festival. And my passion is really where culture meets ecology. And so everything I do is about how to change people's behavior so that we can regenerate landscapes and the earth.
Wonderful. And Kofi, for our listeners, where are you exactly?
Okay, right. I'm based in Kumasi, Ghana, West Africa. And I'm born and raised in London. So I was born in a Ghanaian house in London. And so from a young age, I've always wanted to come and work in Ghana. And so now I've really enjoying being here and sort of being on the ground and really doing my best to help make an impact.
Yeah, I was just about to say, your accent isn't quite Ghanaian. and you chose the better weather. Right. So you told us about the festival, the dance, and how to bring this all together. Can you tell us more about that dance festival community project you're doing in Ghana?
Yeah. So we started it in 2009. So it's been quite some time now. And then we celebrated the 10th anniversary of the festival last March, just before the lockdown. So we snuck in with one of the last events in last sort of outdoor events in Ghana, and we chose the location because it's this amazing fishing village, sort of off the beaten track. There's surfing there. You know, there's a famous surfing movie called Endless Summer that was filmed there in the 60s, and sort of it's helped to grow a really thriving community of Ghanaian surfers, and there's also surrounded by amazing natural beauty. And you know, in the short time that I've sort of been working in that community, I noticed quite a lot of environmental destruction, some of the big trees getting felled. And so, you know, soon after we started the festival, I realized, you know, this is a great opportunity to help change people's behavior. And right, so my background in the UK was working within the carnival sector. So I was working a lot with the Notting Hill Carnival, which is one of the biggest events in Europe. And that festival is a response to racism, right, in the 60s in London. And it's now evolved into this multicultural festival where culture is celebrated. So, you know, knowing that coming to Ghana, I realized that actually, you know, we can do the same with music and the arts, as well as having amazing musicians in this amazing location within Ghana. We work with the women's group to do sort of organic soap making that we can sell to the festival goers. We also do tree planting during the festival every year, mostly moringa trees. And where we're heading next is like how to, like, this is something I'm grappling with. It's like how to really like kind of motivate people en masse through kind of music in Ghana, in Africa, to like get on the landscape and plant trees. You know, so, you know, the music festival is more, you know, it's more focused on music and sort of enlightening people and everything. But where I want to go now is like, you know, like mass mobilization of people.
That's I think the question so many of us are grappling with is how do we create mass movement toward a sustainable and more inclusive world? I think that's an amazing goal. But if you could just give us a little context about what it feels like on the ground in Africa, right? I mean, you're in Ghana, so let's just focus in on Ghana, West Africa. Many of our listeners probably don't even really get a sense of what life is, what's the level of carbon emissions, how is the planet experiencing life and the people on it in Ghana right now?
You know, it's so many contradictions here, and the, you know, the one that gets me is that there's such amazing opportunity for change, right? So we have very young, sort of like the youngest population on Earth, in the continent, particularly in West Africa, who want change, who are like striving for change, and they're, you know, they're tech savvy, they're connected to the world. But then at the same time, you've got a lot of environmental destruction. So, you know, Ghana has one of the highest rates of deforestation in the world. But it also has quite a well-run forestry commission, right? So a lot of the destruction is coming from smallholder farmers who are, you know, same story across the world, who are degrading the land because of poverty issues, poverty-related issues. So it's really, and then at the same time, you've got this rising population and food is quite expensive here. But, you know, when I go back to London, it doesn't feel that expensive anymore. Which is, you know, which is really not right. You know, we're in the land of abundance. We're in the, you know, we're the land of abundance. We're in a, you know, lush, very fertile land. But food is relatively expensive. So there I see is like there's such a great opportunity for change. However, there's a lot of At the same time, people are moving away from farming, even though, you know, their parents or grandparents were, that was their main profession. So you've got young kids now who are moving away from farming, but still interested in sort of like ecology and wanting to do things better. So it's a really like that's where I'm sort of trying to grapple with it. It's like, how can people be so interested, and how come they're such, there's not much action on the ground, and like farmers are struggling to pay for labor to, you know, on their farms. But at the same time, sort of farming's been romanticized in Ghana.
It feels like it's kind of the typical disconnect I think we have in a lot of rural communities worldwide, actually, where the young people either are forced to move out because there is not enough work there, or completely deforested, you know, there is no forest, no basis to live anymore. So different reasons why to move and leave your, I hate to say it, kind of, I don't like the expression homeland, but that's where, you know, you're where you come from, really, you know, where your roots are. And so there seems to be this disconnect in Ghana as well, right? When you say you have the highest deforestation rate in the world, which seems crazy, and then your program is to replant the forest, how do you feel there is a connection coming back within the young people? And then you combine it with music, so I'm very intrigued about what kind of connections you've found in order to change the behavior. And does it actually work?
I think there's, you know, the musicians in Ghana are the sort of the biggest influence, and you can sort of say that they have, yeah, the most power to influence above, you know, politicians, similar around the world. But I think it's like because there's such a young population here that they've got even more weight. What the musicians say and do has even more weight. So that's one of the sort of like key findings, but it's I'm still, you know, maybe it's out of fear, right? Because I've got all these great connections with these musicians and the land and everything. So I'm sort of like, I don't want it to be corny. I want it to be like meaningful. And I'm sort of like playing around with it in my mind. But as I'm sort of talking it out, I'm thinking, no, just get out and do it, you know, just get, call up five musicians and then get them on the land and start planting trees. And I'm really encouraged. I spoke with Misha of Green Pop in South Africa. I'm not sure if you aware of them, and they're doing amazing things, mixing music and ecology. And right, so they have a ecology festival, and I was like really encouraged. I had a call with him, I think in December, and so it's what I'm finding is that I think I just got to start doing more now that I've sort of like built the infrastructure on the farm, and I've got these great connections with these musicians. And so it's about kind of just doing it.
Can you describe the farm?
Yeah, so we've got a 85-acre parcel of land next to a forest reserve, and then we partnered with farmers to grow indigenous tree species, cash crops, and it's within an agroforestry setting. And then we also have a warehouse where we have two processing machines to process cassava. And so we want to use that warehouse for value addition, because one of the issues is that a lot of the farm produce leaves the farmer raw, so they don't have a hand in its in the value addition. And that's sort of, you can see that in a number of commodities within Ghana. You know, we're blessed with, you know, the second biggest cocoa producer in the world, but we have, you know, like very limited processing capacity in country, right? So it leaves Ghana raw, then gets processed in the Netherlands and America, everywhere else but Ghana. And so the Ghanaian cocoa farmer is poor, right? Is impoverished, right? So it's like, it's just such a, you know, so I was having a conversation with a Ghanaian friend in Thailand, and sort of he was talking about neo-colonialism and how it's sort of restricting our growth. And I was saying, but actually, sure, on certain commodities it is, but there's so many others, right? And we have this young population within Africa where there's a lot of opportunities for change. So I'm really looking to that, right? And looking at other other commodities where Ghanaians, where we have more control over, right? And where we can make it more equal. Yeah,
I think I do too. But so we were interested in cassava. Could you first of all briefly explain what that fruit is? And then the other question I have is, is it a lack of capital investment that causes, you know, no processing to happen in Ghana, or how does that relate to neo-colonialism? Is that just built in, or how can we as people start moving capital so that processing could be in country?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's partly to do with access to capital, because the sort of the average loan rate in Ghana is about 20%, right? So it's you know, it just kills a lot of ideas and development. And whereas I'm in a privileged position because I grew up in Europe, and I, you know, I have contacts and I have the ability to raise capital outside of Ghana, right? And that's just completely wrong. It's a, you know, so, you know, I think it's really like the whole economic system needs to sort of be broken down and rebuilt. And I'm really encouraged by, blockchain and other technologies that really have the potential to give power back to the farmer. And that's all, you know, that's another side of what we do. We're sort of positioning ourselves to be able to partner with a blockchain company that would be able to, and you know, there's a number of encouraging models out there that we can partner with, you know, that. And I'm a firm believer in that the solutions are already out there, right? You know, it yeah, that's the sort of the optimist in me.
It's really fantastic how you span, you know, the spectrum from tech, talking about blockchain and the finances and music, and then going to the agriculture and to the actual crop. Yeah, it's sort of Mother Earth, right? And I've seen a little video about the, what's it called, the cassava. Yeah, I have no idea what it is, quite frankly. I've seen some sort of root crop. I think. Tell us a little bit, let's start there again with Mother Earth and the crop.
And the trees, how does it relate to the trees?
So cassava is like, again, I think one of the reasons why I like it is because it has so much potential, but if it's not farmed right, it destroys the soil, right? Because it's really bad as a monocultural crop, but it also has great potential for energy production in Ghana. It has great potential for food security. It can grow in poor soils. When it grows in rich soils, it really grows, right? So it's a fantastic crop in Ghana, and Ghana was sort of where the sixth largest producer of cassava in the world. However, we're not using the crop to its full potential, right? So although a number of farmers grow the crop, those farmers are not networked, and they're not networked to a processing factory, right? And because of that, it's still seen in Ghana as a poor man's crop. But actually, if you go to Thailand, they're earning billions from processing cassava and selling cassava starch to Europe. We even buy cassava starch in Ghana for our industries.
So is cassava a historic crop which has always been used in Ghana, or is it something which was newly introduced?
So this is also the beauty of it. So it was brought over, you know, the story goes that it was brought over by the Spanish to Ghana. So it's originally from South America, or it might be Central America, but it's from that region, and they call it in their manioc or manioca in South America, South and Central America.
And then I've seen that there are all these different cool stuff you can basically do with cassava apart from eating it. So I'd seen the pharmaceutical industry, textile industry, what else? And how do you make sure that this is not repeating its history and like, yeah, it's, you know, poor farmers in Ghana, and then the actual utility or the bigger utility where the big dollars are connected is somewhere in Europe or the United States?
I think with cassava, it's used a lot in Ghana. And it can be used, in industry, and for, we use it a lot for food. For fufu is our main crop in Ghana, and cassava is a main ingredient in that. But again, I'm encouraged by looking at other examples around the world, particularly in Denmark. So they have they're number one starch producer, not from cassava but from potatoes, and so they have because of their culture, they have a lot of cooperatives, right? So their farmers are networked and they own the factories, right? So these farmers are very wealthy, right? They can take care of their kids. They can afford to send their kids to the best schools, you know, in direct contrast to the average Ghanaian farmer. So there's a real opportunity to use technology and to use technology to network these farmers and give them ownership of factories. That's really important. That's very, very important. And I think cassava, unlike cocoa, is that it's used predominantly by Ghanaians. You know, the average farmer doesn't know what chocolate tastes like, but they definitely know what cassava tastes like and how to use it.
You said it's not a good monoculture crop, so it would require some kind of a permaculture design. Where is that a huge shift for the farmers in Ghana to move from a monoculture crop to a more permaculture, diverse ecology?
Unfortunately, it is, but if you go back two generations or a generation of farmers, they were farming with trees on their farm and on their farms. But in recent times, they've sort of been looking to Europe for and how Europe is or sort of the Northern Hemisphere, where it doesn't rain as heavy as it does in this part of the world. So it's really dangerous to leave your soil bare in this part of the world, because when it rains, it really rains, and a lot of the nutrients run off. So unfortunately, in the last sort of, let's say, 50, 60 years, there's been a huge shift to monoculture cultivation, and it's depleting our soils. And I'm getting worked up just thinking about it, because a lot of farmers complain about their soils depleting, and then they'll go into the forest, clear more land of that virgin land, deplete those soils, and then, take more of the forest. So we need to go back to, and there's a saying in Ghana, Sankofa, like go back to your kind of history. And so we need to go back and just relearn, right? And, they were adopting permaculture practices here not so long ago. They're adopting agroforestry practices here not so long ago. That's the real challenge is to, through education, helping farmers remember what their sort of grandparents did. And when you talk to farmers, they say, yeah, actually there's more trees on the farm, and that's how we farmed, and there was a wide range of crops that we grew on the farm, right? And so that's the real challenge.
So when you say go back to your roots, is this also portrayed in the music you choose?
Very good question. I mean, this is sort of what and this is the messaging I've been having difficulty with. It's like how to, because like in the songs that motivate the sort of younger population of not all ranges in Ghana is the message, right? And it's usually short and sharp. So this is what, and so when you're sort of describing agroecology, it's not short and sharp. It's not short and sharp. So this is one of the things I've been having difficulty with. So how to get that message across. Yeah. I don't have an answer for that. I'm in search of it.
Well, I don't know the music part. I know that monoculture is not the answer, not in Europe and not in any modern country. And I think we are actually, people are waking up to these massive problems. Monoculture is inherently, breeding this whole rat tail of problems with comes with it. And it actually doesn't really solve the food problem.
Yeah. I think we're learning that diversity almost on every dimension of human life is a good thing.
Indeed, exactly. Amen.
I wonder if you could describe, you mentioned blockchain, and I've read that you're interested in supply chain, kind of supply chain of farming and food as part of your perspective. How do you see trends like these new currencies becoming usable in an African country like Ghana, and how involved would banks need to be, or would people need to be educated somehow to develop these other tools, these other economic tools that might empower Africans?
Yeah, I think this is also the challenge, because in Nigeria, our neighbor here in the region, they banned Bitcoin. They couldn't fully ban it because they'd have to shut down the internet, but they put a lot of restrictions on trading Bitcoin within Nigeria, because in a short time, we know how sort of savvy Nigerians can be with finance, right? So so in a short space of time, Bitcoin trading grew astronomically within Ghana, and then in Nigeria, and the Nigerian central bank was scared by it, and instead of embracing it, they tried to shut it down. You know, it's completely short-sighted. It's not gonna, they're gonna have to reverse the decision sooner or later. People are gonna find workarounds. And I think this is a challenge that we need to overcome. And I think it's blocking a lot of growth, but it's still not stopping innovation, right? So I think in terms of opportunities, I think what I can see in sort of in the short time I've been sort of mostly in Ghana is that I've seen a huge adoption of mobile money and sort of mobile transactions, and there's only less than 10% of people have bank accounts here, but I need to look at the stats, but it's much more than 50% have a mobile money wallet, right? So these are the sort of innovations, and I'd love to see how we can link sort of these cryptocurrencies to mobile wallets, right? And then if we can also, again, link farmers to production facilities that they have part ownership in, so that they can sort of build up a credit history. Once they build up a credit history, then they're much more sort of, you know, they some sort of more lending can take place to them, right? So they can grow more crops, so they can diversify their crops, they can pay for labor, because it's still very labor intensive, and a lot of farmers can't afford just to even pay labor to sort of clear the land for the next season.
Right.
So even within Ghana, and you have farmers and land and fertile land, could you imagine a system that you could create with a local currency, for example, that is fully self-sustaining? Like, how much reliance do you have on imports, and how much of that reliance could you actually, you know, satisfy within the country?
Yes, definitely. I think I've wholeheartedly believe that, and it was sort of really interesting when Ghana went into lockdown. It really didn't feel like a crisis. Sort of people were just kind of just getting on with it. The airport was closed for the airports and sort of land borders were closed for about 8 months, and sort of everyone just got on with it. And sort of, and then I was sort of, it was really surreal because, you know, I've got family in the States and across Europe, and they were going insane. Complete meltdown and whatnot. So I think there's a lot of resilience built into Ghanaian culture. Yeah. And I was really encouraged by how quickly people adapted their behavior. So I think there's a very good example of kind of how Ghana just carried on and self-sustained itself in this global pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually saw a world map yesterday, which showed most of Africa down to like 0.2% per 100,000 or 2 people per 100,000, whereas Europe and the United States are still raging, you know.
Because we are dependent on pleasure, you know. If you cut off our pleasure, we're going to go out and get it no matter what.
You think that's what it is? You don't think Ghana
is
like
we're dependent on pleasure and sugar, and so you cut us off, we need to get it. And I think in probably Africa, and you say more resilient, is like you're probably actually pretty happy where you are already. You're not dependent on all of this input and entertainment and you know, sugar and.
What does sugar have to do with COVID?
Well, go to Africa and eat a real food. It is not as processed, not as industrialized. It has a lot less sugar here, and then compared to the regular food we get here.
I got that, but what does it have to do with COVID spreading?
Okay, well, that's another discussion.
I don't get what she's saying, but anyway.
No, but I think there's you know, like the world can learn a lot from Africa, and I think there's a real danger right now, because Africa's looking for certain things to sort of like the Northern Hemisphere, and they want these, they want, you know, they're asking for these high fructose corn syrup products now, right? It's like, so there's a real, you know, it could go either way, right? I'm an optimist, but I'm very, very fearful at this time. You know, if you also look at what's happening with, for example, gay rights in Africa, there's been a huge debate in Ghana because there's a gay rights organization that opened the center. And the argument that, you know, Ghanaians are using is that it's not our culture. And, you know, it's like no to gay people. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. You know, it's like, it doesn't quite work like that. And so there's this, because of this kind of colonial hangover is what I call it, is that there's a lot of confusion, because in the colonial period, Africa was completely transformed. You know, it had complete upheaval of political systems in a quite short space of time. So in that kind of confusion, there's a lot of sort of Islam and Christianity, these Abrahamic religions really got a strong foothold, and which has now become the dominant culture. So it's interesting the arguments that they're using in saying that this is European culture. And I'm thinking, actually Christianity was brought here by Europe. So so a lot of people are blinded by this, again, because of the colonial hangover and the sort of unspoken pain of kind of the colonial era, is a lot of confusion. I'm sort of struggling to find the words, but it's a real sensitive time, again, with the climate, and which has a big impact on culture.
Yeah, you touched on so many really important topics, and I love the nucleus that you interconnect and interlink, and the word colonial hangover is
that's an
perfect.
Awesome description.
Kofi, is there anything we haven't asked you where you think like, oof, this is really close to my heart, I would like to let this go out,
or a message for individuals, what, you know, what we could do to help the situation and move those masses?
Yeah, I think we need to remember how interconnected the world is. We need to look at Africa as part of humanity, even though it looks very strange and there's a lot of strange things sort of happening. But we need to sort of really understand Africa better. And I'm talking to Africans and non-Africans, and because there's so much knowledge that's being lost right now because of modernity, because of it's like a double-edged sword technology, right? So because of these sort of I'll still call them gifts, we need to that Ghanaian saying, Sankofa, we need to kind of go back to our roots and remember how we lived in harmony with the earth. It's not that long ago.
I love your message, Kofi. I hope we can produce a great episode with you.
Thank you too. It's been great.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.